Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Scott Pianowski. It is Monday, September 14th, smack dab in the baseball pennant races, trying to get you a championship in your Yahoo Fantasy Baseball League. And who better to bring in than our ace baseball writer, Fred Zinke. You know him, you love him, from the great country of Canada. He's been doing unbelievable work for us this year. He's really taken over as the main baseball writer, as I've been doing a lot of football stuff as of late. And Fred wants you to win a championship. Fred's cruising to the Labor Championship as we speak. He's probably got like three trophy rooms in his house or all the different things that he's won. So let's say hello to Fred. Fred Zinke, hello.
Hey, how are you? I do not have a fantasy baseball trophy room. I will say that I only once have ever been given a trophy. I don't know if you have ever, Scott, for a league. Like, leagues don't usually have trophies. Tout Wars about 10 years ago did have trophies. I had one trophy. I brought it home from New York. My wife said, "What do you want to do with this?" And I don't think I've ever seen it since. I think, you know what I mean? Like, how do you say to your wife, like, "I think I'd like to display this"? It never got displayed. I don't know where it is anymore. I hate to say that, but it's in my house somewhere. She wouldn't have thrown it out, but she was kind of like, "What do you want to do with this fantasy baseball championship trophy?" And I was like, "I don't know. What do you want to do with it?" It never got up.
Yeah, I in my bathroom, which is almost like a reading room for me, I have a couple of random fantasy trophies. I won something in Fantasy Pros like 9 years ago. There's a big football trophy in there. There's a keeper league that I grew up with playing with guys in the Chelmsford area. And my friend Larry Holt, who founded that league, he had an old bowling trophy that he ended up putting like a baseball glove, like a trophy type of glove on the top of it. I'm not doing this justice. He made this immaculate, wonderful trophy for this Chelmsford baseball league that we're in, keeper league, and it has all the champions on it. So that thing is actually like our Stanley Cup. I've flown with that before. You know, I've had to throw it through the checkpoints and everything, through TSA, and given it seat in first class. That trophy only flies first class, as do I whenever possible. But back when I used to fly, of course, now it's an all virtual world. But so I have that. There's the auction league, or salary cap league, I should say, that with Michigan guys that I play in. Peter Morris, who's a baseball writer, has a Hall of Fame vote, is in that league. A bunch of people in this area. And I've won that league, I think, 4 out of 5 years, but we didn't run it this year. And I didn't even put my name on the trophy the last season that I won it. So it's sitting in my kitchen. I don't know. Larry Bird used to say that they asked him once, "Hey, you won 3 MVP trophies. Where are the trophies?" He's like, I don't know. "Back of my truck, maybe." He wasn't really sure. Didn't mean that much to him. I mean, we're about the journey here. We're about the experience. We're about the camaraderie. There's no better camaraderie than fantasy sports. You know, the way to stay in touch. I stay in touch with lifelong friends, people I grew up with, college friends, stuff like that. That said, we're all friends here, but winning is more fun than not winning. And it's been a very unusual season. It's been a better season than I expected. I was worried that the season would get started and maybe wouldn't get completed. There's been a couple of different COVID outbreaks. But here we are. We're going to have, it looks like, a full season. Then we're going to have an unusual playoffs. And we're going to try to get you in the winner's circle. Before we talk about some of Fred's strategies, I think we have to give a nod to Chicago Cubs right-hander Alec Mills, who threw a no-hitter, a very unusual no-hitter at the Brewers on Sunday. I think he had just 5 swings and misses. And he had ERA not that long ago. It was mid-5. So, you know, he kind of came out of nowhere, throws a no-hitter on Sunday. We're going to be drafting unusual no-hitters at the end of this podcast. What do we do when a guy like Alec Mills comes out of nowhere, especially when he's pitching to so much contact? Is he a fantasy ad for the rest of the season?
So I think he largely isn't, especially so. You know, I always say that, usually you're looking for Mr. Right. And now at this point in the season, you're looking for Mr. Right now. And Alec Mills, the key thing here in your description of the no hitter is Sunday. Sunday means no more 2-start weeks. It means that he'll start this week, probably on, I think he's starting on Saturday, next week, Thursday or Friday. And then that's it. So you get a start against the Twins this week, and a start against the Pirates next week. So the Pirates starts decent. The Twins starts actually not as scary as we thought it was going to be, but still not favorable. Alec Mills, the skill set still looks like he's a streaming type starter who happened to throw a no-hitter. So, you know, I get there's not a lot of starting pitching on the waiver wire right now. That was my toughest. I don't know about you, Scott, but my toughest category or area when I was doing my fab bids last night was finding starting pitching. So if someone wants to grab Alec Mills just for that reason only, just because he is a starter who will probably throw five or six innings next time out, I get it. That being said, I don't think he's a must add by any stretch of the imagination.
It's been a really unusual time for streaming because teams, we've seen this trend for the last few years that starters don't go as deep in games. But now teams have just gone crazy with it, where it's not unusual to see an opener who only pitches an inning or two. It's not unusual to see a pitcher with a lead in the fourth or fifth inning get removed. It used to be that if a pitcher had a big lead and he was in the fifth inning and started getting troubled, any manager would let him try to work out of it because they wanted to give him a chance for the win. Managers just don't do that anymore. And so when I think about streaming, it used to be I'd stream a pitcher and think, okay, maybe I'll get six innings out of this guy, maybe seven if it goes well, at least five. Now I'm trying to stream pitchers and hope that they can even go four or five innings and get me some strikeouts. Even the chances of a win, we're seeing more and more wins distributed through relief pitching than starting pitching than ever before. Just talk about the challenges of streaming, if there's some streamers you like this week, and just how the landscape of pitching in baseball seems to be different right now.
Yeah, so Scott, I saw you comment on Twitter, I think it was maybe 5 days ago or so, on a tweet about how the relief pitchers, I believe, have outwinned the starting pitchers so far this year. Did I get that right? I think that at that moment, the relief pitchers had just slightly moved right ahead of starting pitching for wins. So I agree with you. I think our knee-jerk reaction is to find a streamer, meaning typically it used to be find a guy who could give you five or six innings, maybe get you four or five strikeouts, and you have your chance at a win. In my mind this year, I've basically taken any starter who I don't believe will maybe has like an 80% chance of throwing five innings. I'm not interested. Like, I'm not interested in the Tanner Roarks or the Chase Andersons to grab a couple guys off my local Blue Jays. Like, I'm not interested in those guys because the odds are probably about 60% that they won't throw five innings, which means they can't get you a win. At that point, I would rather just put Chad Green in my lineup. There, he's kind of one of my go-to type middle relievers. Tends to throw two or three innings a week, get probably about four strikeouts a week, maybe five. I believe he's averaging four strikeouts a week this year. I think he has something like three wins and a save. So, you know, we've played what now, 8 weeks? We've played 8 weeks. He's got three wins and a save. That's almost a win every other week. I know that's maybe a little favorable, but even if he had two wins and a save, like those bad starters, you're probably not, if you've been streaming the Tanner Roark types all season, you probably only got two wins, maybe three. So you didn't get any better than Chad Green anyways. You got worse ratios, and you probably didn't get any more strikeouts. So I think we have to start moving our mind. Obviously, streaming starters is a great idea if you can find someone you like. But if you can't find anyone you like I kind of feel like don't force it. So Julio Teheran's a good example. He has two starts this week. Just don't do it. Like I get it. It's late September, and you can do it if you're just throwing everything, you know, throw the kitchen sink at them. I'm in 10th place. I just got to try something. You mentioned good, you know, streamers for this week. I think Dane Dunning's a great one. So I tried to look before the podcast at pitchers who were owned in 30% of less than or less in Yahoo leagues, you know, who I would really want to stream this week. Dunning should be a two-start pitcher. He's been a little inconsistent with his control, but a lot more good than bad. The White Sox have been really good. I think he's the guy, you know, that people should be rushing out to pick up.
I feel like I've said this just about every week we've done a podcast, but these relief pitchers have been such a cheat code. And I know this is going to be a little bit cherry picking because I'm going to go off the top of guys who've had unbelievable seasons. We're talking about relievers who aren't closers. Devin Williams of Milwaukee is still rostered in just 41% of Yahoo leagues. What he's given us is 19 innings, ERA of 0.47, a whip of 0.63, and he's picked up three wins. He's got 39 strikeouts. You might think, okay, well, you know, that's just one guy. He's gone in my league. Matt Foster, Chicago White Sox. You know, a reliever on a winning team is usually a good idea. His ERA is 1.31, whip under one. He's got more than the strikeout per inning. He's got four wins. Even on a bad team, Texas, Jonathan Hernandez has five wins, a decent ERA under three, a whip under one. And you might think, in the old days, you might think, oh, those wins are just really, they're hard to chase. They happen. They come and go. There's no pattern to them. But now, if we know the teams are maybe more likely to get a win from their relief pitcher than they are from their starting pitcher, all of a sudden, these are things worth chasing. And what I'll do sometimes is I'll quote-unquote stream a reliever. I'll look at somebody like Foster and say, oh, okay, he hasn't pitched for 2 or 3 days, and no word of an injury. Maybe he's likely to pitch in the next couple of days. And I'll hope to get lucky with some ratio-smoothing innings, a few strikeouts, maybe a shot at a win. I feel like streaming relievers is maybe a better strategy now than streaming starters.
I love it. I think that's a great way to explain it. I can give a great example in Tout NL, which is obviously the waiver wire is pretty barren. I added for this week, we'll see if it works out, but I added Yimi Garcia and Nick Vincent. Both have great ratios, nice strikeout to walk rates. Vincent has, I think, 3 saves this year. Garcia has 1. They're a little unsettled at closer right now with Brandon Kinsler. Kinsler's still the closer, but they're a little unsettled. And the Marlins have a slew of remaining games, a lot of doubleheaders, those 7-inning games where, you know, maybe they need 2 closers on the same day, or maybe Kinsler pitches the day before the doubleheader and isn't available for the doubleheader at all. So streaming relievers, I think, is a great idea. It starts with this year, especially, it starts with looking at the schedule. I really wanted to stream some Cardinals relievers this week. And for those in Yahoo Daily Leagues who can still go, I didn't find ones on waivers that I really liked, but the Cardinals play 10 games this week. Like, that is ridiculous in 1 week. If you're in a Yahoo League and you want to fill a pitching spot, find an effective Cardinals reliever. Giovanni Gallegos is out right now. They're going to have some saves this week. The Cardinals are going to accumulate 2 or 3 saves this week, and we don't really know who's going to get them. Same with wins. They're going to get some reliever wins this week. We don't really know who's going to get them. So it's as easy in the Yahoo system as sort by team, pick up, look at St. Louis pitchers, find some relievers who have been pitching well and add them. But I think adding setup men as volume plays is an evolving strategy.
And you also talk about working the schedule, which is always a big part of fantasy strategy. And you mentioned in your recent article on Yahoo that the Reds, they get a Pirates team that's been one of the weakest teams in baseball right now. And you know, Cincinnati's one of the teams that doesn't mind running. There's a couple of guys who are running right now for the Reds. Talk about some of the targets for possible pickups in Cincinnati.
Yeah, Shogi Akiyama is I think he's starting. If you want steals, I think the Reds are a nice place to look. And Brian Goodwin. So Akiyama and Goodwin have both been stealing bases of late. We know steals is a tight category where you can move up late in the season. As far as bats go, Joey Votto is not exciting, but in a volume play, it depends on your league size, but in a volume play type scenario, he's still hitting really high in the lineup. If they just have some games where they score 7 runs, I know that Reds lineup hasn't been as productive this year as we were hoping it would be. That being said, there's still a lot of talent there. And if you get some favorable matchups, like all you're really asking them to have is a really good series this week against a bad Pirates pitching staff.
You know, I feel like I blew it with Jared Walsh, where I should have been hip to what he was doing before he went to Colorado. And then he had to hit a couple of home runs in the Texas series. Then he goes to Colorado. He gets a couple more home runs. Two hits in each of the 3 games. There weren't crazy Coors games. The Angels only scored 14 runs in the 3 games. So it wasn't like we saw Coors Field really show its teeth over the weekend. But I'm curious if you think Walsh is still going to be a viable play now that he's back at sea level. And with some more Coors Field games on the way in, is there an opportunity to buy, whether it be Rockies or opponents? Do you see anybody who might be lining up for Coors this week?
Yeah, I think with Walsh, is interesting. He's got that late bloomer thing going, right? He's 27. His OPS in the minors last year was a little over 1100. Like, when I see a 1000 OPS, I always check for those call-up type guys, their MILB page. And when I see 1000, I get fired up. When I see 11, I don't see 1100. Like, that's pretty rare. Now, I know he's too old for the level last year, like too old to be in the minors, but he still did it. I really looked a lot last night at Walsh, at Bobby Dalbec from the Red Sox, and DJ Stewart from the Orioles, kind of depending on positional needs, whether I wanted a corner or an outfielder. But all, if you need late season home runs, and I have one team actually in our labor league, is the one league where I really, it's tight. I'm tightly bunched right now in home runs. I put in significant bids on Stewart, Dalbec, and Walsh in that order, the same amount on all of them, but in that order. I ended up getting Dalbec, didn't get Walsh. I would be totally confident that Walsh is going to hit. I'm not saying he's going to hit 4 home runs this week, but I mean, if he hits 1, that's a decent week. Like, one, like I always say, 1 homer a week over a real season is a 26 homer season. That's a pretty good season if you're grabbing a guy off the waiver wire because you need power late. So if Walsh could hit 1 this week, and maybe he does hit 2. So I think if you're looking for power, those are the 3 guys that I was really targeting, and all 3 are available in most Yahoo leagues.
One of my favorite things to do in Yahoo is collect as many multiple position eligibility players as I can. And especially in 2020, where a huge part of fantasy has just been getting a team on the field, right? All the postponements, the schedule's been kind of wonky. In the friends and family we're in together, I'm always trying to maximize all the games played. I want to have a catcher every day. I've been lucky enough to have two or three catchers who were playing a lot of non-catcher positions. It means they're in the lineup most of the time. And when I look at some of the most added players in Yahoo, even though I still think there's a chance to get in on these guys, Ty France was hitting for San Diego. He's since been traded to the Mariners. He's hitting for Seattle. He's batting second most days. He qualifies at second and third base. He's only 20% rostered in Yahoo. And I think because Tommy La Stella's career popped late in, right around his age 30 season, I think people just decided, oh, he's a journeyman. He's a quad A player. He's not really a starter. Qualifies at first, second, third base. And the A's look at him as a regular player. He's batting first or second, and what I still think is a decent lineup. And now with Chapman out for the year, it just ensures that La Stella's going to have somewhere in the lineup he'll be. And again, the three positions of eligibility, he's available in about 60% of Yahoo League. So there's just a couple of guys who caught my eye because they're hitting and they play multiple positions. Chris Taylor's starting to get a little bit more run with the Dodgers. He qualifies at three different positions. He's available in about 60% of Yahoo leagues. Do you have any comments on those guys, or is there anybody else who can grab multiple positions who you think would be a good addition for the final couple weeks?
Yeah, I missed on your last question, kind of talking about the upcoming Coors series. So the A's are there for two, and then the Dodgers for four. And we kind of hit on some of their guys there. So I think La Stella is a great ad right now because you can certainly find a way to put him in your lineup. I know it's only two games, but he also has a doubleheader against the Mariners the day before he goes to Colorado. So, and they're playing him so regularly. Like he might play all four games, hit high in the lineup. His approach is great, and maybe Coors helps him even more, helps him get a home run. And then you stumbled into Chris Taylor there, which I think is perfect. Taylor's getting more playing time. I would be because the Dodgers, they'll use the platoons. Kiki Hernandez will play certain games. You can really go day to day with the Dodgers, in your Yahoo lineups now for those four games. It's like that wraparound series, I believe, that goes into Monday. But I think Taylor's a worthwhile ad because, again, you'll be able in a Yahoo Daily League, you'll probably have someone who's not starting, right? And I know that's kind of where you're going with that. Like, you'll have someone who's not starting on any given day. So if you're quick enough to get into your lineup, you can put Taylor in or you can put La Stella in. And I will say, even though they aren't multi-position players, a couple of guys who I have my eye on in some leagues because from the Rockies for that homestand, Raimel Tapia. Didn't play yesterday with like a stomach issue, but I think he should be fine for Tuesday. He's been playing a lot and hitting leadoff and hitting for average, stealing the odd base. And the other one, if you need homers, I already mentioned a few homer guys, but Matt Kemp, we know Matt Kemp's not a great player anymore, but I think he's got about 6-7 home runs this year. They're home for six games. They're going to face two or three lefties during that time. You might be, if you use them on the right days, you might be able to get a home run out of Kemp.
When we talk about La Stella and Taylor, I think the only thing about players like that can be frustrating sometimes for me is because they play on the West Coast and their games generally start later, especially this year where there's no, the teams out West don't play the teams out East at all. So those Dodger games, those Oakland games are generally starting late on a typical slate. And so it means you have to hope they release the lineup early enough that you can have flexibility. Sometimes I think it's a little bit easier to have East Coast players. I would never do this intentionally, but I like to have a balance between East Coast, West Coast, just so the timing of when the rosters come out, you don't get tripped up by, okay, I was waiting for Dave Roberts to set his lineup. I finally found out that Taylor isn't in it. I was planning on him playing, maybe you end up chewing a game play where he only gets one at bat or something like that. I mean, there's nothing really you can do about that except just be aware. And I want to say, now that we're in September, now that all sports are playing, right, the hockey playoffs, basketball playoffs, the NFL just returned this week, you will pass teams. Maybe you're in seventh or eighth place right now. You can still come in the money. There are going to be people in your league who their kids are college or they're distracted by other sports or whatever. The penetration or the engagement level is always going to go down now because some people can't contend or this have other things going on in their life. Half the battle right now is just staying engaged and setting a lineup every day and doing your diligence, making sure you get your hurt guys out and stuff. All simple things. Nothing illuminary about that. But I feel like you can always, have a good September if you just put the work in.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And the good news this year is that most Septembers, sometimes it is too late. After we've played 5 months out of six, you know, you're over 80% of the way through the season. Sometimes it just is too late and you have a good September, but you're just too far behind in a lot of categories. Right now, you know, we only have 2 weeks left. Okay, teams only have, you know, maybe 13 games left or something like that. Well, that's 13 out of 60, right? So that's a decent percentage of the schedule left. So you can still, especially if you're looking at your categories in a roto league, or, you know, you can still make up a lot of ground. And you're right. Like, this is the time where people start struggling. I had to really set a schedule for myself this week with all my fantasy football teams, right? Like last night I had to put my phone away because I'm getting all these texts. Tom Brady did this and Drew Brees did that. And I need to put that away because I had NFBC bids to do and Tout Wars bids and labor bids. I needed to focus on them, but I needed my phone actually to look up the baseball scores and the lineups and everything. So, but I was trying to ignore football for a period of probably 3 hours yesterday to get the bids done properly, to get an article written. Everybody's going to struggle with that, getting their football bids in, but keeping track of baseball lineups that day. If you keep your eye on the prize in a baseball league, you could walk away. You could move, like you said, you can move from fourth to first or something like that in a lot of leagues. If you have a plan and if you stay scheduled to it, I always say, if you're in daily leagues, like a lot of Yahoo leagues, set alarms on your phone. It's like, I think it's invaluable. I don't do it enough, but if you want to set an alarm on your phone every day for whatever, 6:30, which gets you most lineups, unless there's a lot of day games, get you most lineups to go in and just rotate your hitters, right? Make sure you've got set alarms on your phone, set an alarm on your phone for 8 a.m. to just go in and make sure your pitchers are in for that day. Let's be honest, with our phones now, it only takes you a couple minutes, a minute, to just at least set your lineup, whether you scour waivers or not. Set an alarm on your phone and you're way ahead.
Yeah, probably my two biggest fantasy hacks that I'm always saying. One is just what you just said with all the stuff with the phone, because life is dynamic and life is complicated and it's easy to forget things. I mean, 15, 20 years ago, my strategy for remembering things was, oh, I'll remember that. You know, Fred and I are having lunch at 3 o'clock. I'll remember that. But there's so many things going on in our lives. It's just easy to forget things or dates run together or things, you know, come out of nowhere. Your dog needs to go to the vet. Your car needs to get repaired, whatever it is. You need to have a schedule and a routine. And the best way to do that is to get those reminders in your phone, which was kind of our personal assistant for all of us is our phone these days. And I also think just when you're thinking about joining the next wave of fantasy sport, you know, whether it's when the hockey starts up again or basketball or baseball next year, or even if you're thinking about joining a fantasy football league, you can still do that at Yahoo Sports, by the way. I think if you can find the right partner, I don't know if you've ever partnered up with anybody, Fred, but I know the times where I've had the right fantasy partner, all of a sudden the work is cut in half. You have somebody who's invested in the team, somebody to talk about the team with. My friend Scott Gleason's been a longtime partner of mine in that keeper league I talked about. My Yahoo colleague Frank Schwab and I have run some teams together and had some success. You know, not every team we run together is going to be great, but you know, we both have you have to have a similar worldview and you both have to kind of have the same, I don't know, investment in the work and all that. But I think if you find the right partner, I think that's really a cheat code for fantasy.
I agree. So I had never used a partner in any fantasy sport until this year. I partnered with Jeff Zimmerman from Fangraphs for a few NFBC leagues, and it's gone, in my opinion, it's gone really well. I think it's been mutually beneficial. We're both keeping our eyes on lineups and, you know, and news around the league. And then, you know, for those leagues, it's kind of easy to do your bids. You kind of, because it's not a daily, you can kind of hop on Skype or something like that on a Sunday night, talk for half an hour, 45 minutes, whatever. And then, you know, and you're working on, you know, your fab bids for your teams that you share. But then the information that you're talking about just in those conversations, right, helps spill into then even teams that you manage on your own. So I might say, you know, oh, I really want to, I kind of think in this guy for saves. And then maybe he'll say, well, I read this about him and I'm, oh, okay, maybe I should back off. And then that might change a labor bid, or he might have the same thing where he suggests something. And I'm like, oh, I saw this on him. And he's like, oh, okay, maybe I don't want him as much as I did a few minutes ago. So yeah, I think having a partner, if you can find someone, you know, who you really respect and, you know, thinks differently than you, but maybe overall has a similar approach. I guess that you want someone who doesn't see everything the exact same as you, I think. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it can definitely be mutually beneficial.
And much respect to Jeff Zimmerman, who does a great podcast on his own with Rob Silver and Van Lee. It's one of my favorite listens. And, you know, of course, Jeff's been very successful as a writer and as a fantasy player. All those guys know their stuff. Rob Silver's one of the best players out there. You also, just hearing you talk about that makes me think of another thing I love to do. And it's the simplest thing in the world. Most of our weekly fab bidding is done on Sunday. And not only do I have a phone reminder for all that, but in a typical year, I would have bids due at 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock and midnight in the different leagues that I'm in. And so after the bids come in at six, first of all, it's just fun to go see what the bid results were. You know, I mean, we put our offers in, you see what players you got, you see what other people, you get instant market feedback about what everybody else thinks about a closer situation or a hot prospect or somebody who just happened to have a good week, whatever it is, how they're disseminating the news. And then you can apply that to your next wave of bids and your next wave of bids. And, you know, I mean, just crib off, if, you know, say if you pick up somebody of interest in the Friends and Family League and I can't get that player, maybe that player is available in one of my other leagues. I mean, we're all playing in multiple leagues anyway. You should apply what the information you gain from one league and find a league that's parallel in structure. And maybe you can apply that, you know, just crib off, learn what you take, what you learn from one league and apply it to a different league. It's the simplest thing in the world. But that's one of my favorite hacks when I'm doing my Sunday bidding.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, if you have a mix of daily and weekly, like say in our Friends and Family, which is a daily and waivers is always open. If you just, I don't do this enough, but if you just check and see who was at it yesterday or today so far from everyone else, you know, oh, why did Scott add this guy? Oh, interesting. Maybe I should look at a little background behind him because Scott must have a thought process as to why he added that guy. And then maybe you get, you know, kind of interested in that guy. And then maybe you go grab him in another league. I think you're right about the Sunday bids. Like I like that. I don't always like it because I have to hustle sometimes to get them done, but I like the Tout Wars bids are at 8 because that helps with your NFBCs at 10 and it helps with labor at midnight. You know, there's not much cheat code for me for the Tout ones. They come first. I fly into those blind a little bit, but it's good. And I think that's a great idea by the board at Tout Wars to kind of, I'm sure a lot of people look up, especially the mixed leagues. I'm sure a lot of people look up the mixed league bidding at 8 o'clock to see, you know, what people went for. And I know every league's unique, especially late in the season with how much people have left. Go back to Jared Walsh. He could go for $7 in a league last night and 170 in another. Just depends what people have left. But just seeing the priority, who went for the most, second most, the third most, you know, who was really cheap. And if you can ever look at two or three leagues, then that gives you, I think, a pretty good average.
Now you mentioned that the last bidding in that Sunday cadence is generally the labor leagues run by Steve Gardner. And I'm going to give you a victory lap here. I'm looking at the labor standings and I see Fred Zinke at first place, 121 points. USA Today, Steve Gardner's team on the upswing, but still 14 points behind you. I think you can hold off the rest of the league for the next 2 weeks. I'm also in the standings much further down. I'm not anywhere close to the top. And I'm looking at the stat page for this league, and you're competitive in every category. It's so rare you see a team like this. You have double digits in 9 of the 10 categories, and then you have 9 points in ERA, so you're actually competitive there too. Tell us, Fred Zinke, how did you build this juggernaut? I know you've had success in expert league, so that doesn't surprise me, but man, how did you smash every category in labor?
Well, Fernando Tatis helped. So I have to give him a lot of the credit. I'll be honest, I don't feel totally safe in that league yet because my pitching staff is running on fumes. It was running on fumes last week, and then I kind of got a little lucky. I think Greg Holland got me like a win and a save or something along the lines that week, which I really needed. Going back to something we talked about earlier, so I drafted Justin Verlander in the first round. Whoops, that didn't work out at all. And so I had to pivot with pitching. So I have been using a lot of relievers this season. Basically, I'm doing what we talked about earlier. If I like 5 starters that week, I'll use 5 starters. If I like 6, I'll use 6. If I like 7, I'll use 7. But a lot of weeks lately, I only like about 5. So I've had Chad Green in a lot. I've had Drew Pomerantz in a lot. You know, I have Josh Hader. So that's been good. But often, I've been just using maybe about 5 starters. Lance Lynn has given mostly what I was expecting from Verlander, at least, and Dylan Bundy's kind of given me what I was expecting from Lance Lynn. So that's kind of made up for it. I added Framber Valdez, which has helped a lot, although not lately. So the pitching staff's been running on fumes a bit. The hitting's been fine, but I'll admit, like, a lot propped up by Tatis and JT Realmuto. So I can, when we talk, there was a conversation on Twitter today about when is your league safe? You kind of do have to look at your roster. Like, if JT Realmuto doesn't play another game this year, there's not much I can do to replace him at catcher, you know, with anyone who's really good. I just need like pitching, I need Lance Lynn and those guys to hold up for maybe even one. If I have this lead next week, I'll feel fine. But I do know that that roster is running on fumes a little bit. Just the Verlander thing has been really, really hard to overcome because there's just not enough starting pitching out there.
So I look at the waiver results from labor on Sunday, and Bobby Dalbec was one of your pickups. You mentioned Matt Kemp in Colorado with some home games, and maybe he can give you some pop there. You also picked up Tony Watson for a dollar. San Francisco has been a lot more competitive than I expected. They may actually sneak into the playoffs. What do you see from Watson for the next week ahead?
Yeah, just maybe a co-closer. We know Gabe Kapler's all over the map with his saves, but I think Watson and maybe Tyler Rogers are kind of the best bets from that bullpen. And as you said, like, they've been more competitive. Well, they're a playoff team right now, which is and basically a 500 team. They kind of go right around that 500 mark all the time. So I'm hoping that Tony Watson could get me just a save. But he was really just, I wouldn't say desperation play, but I looked through waivers. I probably looked through our waiver wire three times trying to find a starter that I wanted to use this week, and I could not find one at all who I felt good about. So in the end, I just grabbed another reliever, and he'll join Pomerantz and Hader and Chad Green all in the starting lineup. And I think I've got five starters going, six total starts, but I'll hope. Oh, and Greg Holland. I might have all those guys in my starting lineup. I'll hope that out of all those relievers, I can get even one win. Two would be a bonus, but one win. It's just what you have to do, I think, this season.
And remember, this is, again, kind of rudimentary, but I'll say it anyway. We're just trying to massage the categories. We're just trying to get the stats to reflect what you need to accomplish your objective. And, you know, if you have a huge lead in stolen bases, you may play a player you think is inferior because he has a power potential, but he's not going to run. I mean, if you need to, it's a statistical puzzle you need to solve, and you don't necessarily have to put your strongest roster out. You need to put the roster out, whether it's playing time or the stats they accumulate, that makes the most sense to get, just solve this puzzle statistically. Don't be hung up on it. This is also a tip for trading. You don't have to win a trade in a vacuum, you know, trading. You just have to get what you need statistically that makes the puzzle work for you.
That's right. And especially this late in the season, I have one NFBC team right now where from the hitting side, basically I only care about steals. The other categories I'm not moving in, or maybe I can move one spot in a couple of categories. Steals I could move a lot. It's just pieces to the puzzle at this point. I picked up Manny Margot in that league. I picked up Joey Wendell. I'm just hoping they'll steal a base this week. You know, Margot has 11 steals, which makes him a great, like, one category guy. If you're looking for anything else, you're going to be disappointed. So, and you're right. It's especially the same with late season trading. I think early season trading, you're looking for people who you really like, people you believe in, people who you really value, whether you're buying low or getting in on someone on the way up. This late in the season, I know the trade deadline's passed in a lot of leagues, although I think in Tout Wars it just passed last night. I think it was open later than most. We didn't have any action in our league, but anyways, yeah, you're just looking now just to fill categories.
The words of Fred Zinke, one of our treasured Yahoo baseball writers and just one of the finest fantasy players in the industry and a good friend of mine and a regular guest on the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball podcast. Let's transition to our draft in honor of Alec Mills, who threw a very unlikely no-hitter on Sunday for the Cubs. We're going to draft unusual no-hitters. There's no rules to this. Just going to, you know, Nolan Ryan is ineligible. I'm going to say that. You're not allowed to draft any Nolan Ryan no-hitters, but let's have some fun with it. Fred Zinke, you have the first pick in our no-hitter draft.
So I tried to find kind of to start off, arguably the least well-known. He might not be. He's pretty down there. I'm taking Chris Heston first. So Chris Heston, no-hitter with the Giants. To put that no-hitter in perspective, he threw that following the season in which he threw the no-hitter, which I believe was 2015. Following the 2015 season, he threw 11 more major league innings. So he had a no-hitter in that 2015 season. I don't know if you remember that, but he came out of nowhere to be actually, he became one of those streaming type guys that were lacking in 2020. One of those guys who you could grab and he would get you five or six innings. He had an ERA just under four that year. He was that useful streaming guy that we're missing in 2020. After that season, 11 more major league innings.
It's a great pick. And the names I have in front of me, I tried to find a bunch of guys who maybe weren't always great pitchers who happened to throw no hitters. And I focused on fairly recent events. I'm going to go with Edwin Jackson, who threw a 2010 no hitter. This is a guy played for 14 teams. He for eight of those teams, he was on for just one season, made one all-star team. His career ERA was 4.78. He generally was at league average at best. And, you know, it's amazing that he had this career that he did. And I believe when he threw his no-hitter, it was like 149 pitches or something like that. They wanted him to get it so badly that they left him in the game. And I just think of Edwin Jackson. He symbolizes just the working man, the everyman, just the somehow he was able to have a long career. He wasn't even left-handed. You know, sometimes it's being left-handed that gives you longevity. But he lasted for a long time. I feel like I streamed against him most of the time, like with offensive players or maybe another pitcher. But he had his good moments, too. He did make that one all-star team, and he threw a very unlikely hitter, no hitter, in 2010.
Yeah, he's your ultimate have arm, will travel pitcher with his career and how many teams he played for. For my next one, I don't think the pitcher who threw the no-hitter is unusual, but I'm going with Hideo Nomo.
Oh, you're killing me.
Did I steal one on you there?
Yes, you did.
You know what I'm about to say then. The only no-hitter thrown at Coors Field. And the reason I bring it up is, you know, we always talk about Coors Field with power. And I just talked about Matt Kemp hitting home runs there and things like that. Coors Field plays really, really well for batting average. Probably even better than it plays for power. So for Nomo to be able to throw a no-hitter in the park where it's the easiest to get a hit, I think is a really special accomplishment.
Yeah, because the rules were so kind of flimsy for this draft, as they always are, I encourage flimsiness in these drafts. I also discourage research as much as possible, although I did do a little research for this one. Yeah, Nomo, by the way, also threw a no-hitter for the Red Sox against Baltimore. So he's one of the rare guys who has multiple no-hitters. This is one of my favorite just sports moments, and I point to it a lot. Every once in a while, I'll tweet to it. Watch the clip of Nomo wrapping up this no-hitter. Not only do you get Vin Scully on the call, but when Nomo gets the final out, he just very lightly pumps his fist. If you blink, you would miss it. There's no pointing to the sky. There's no thumping his chest. And look, I don't begrudge anybody who throws a no-hitter and goes crazy. He acts like, you know, this unbelievable event has happened, because an unbelievable event has happened. But if ever a pitcher had a right to jump up and down and chest thump and just go on some crazy display of emotion, it was a no hitter at Coors Field, and Nomo just kind of shrugged it off and took it in stride. I think it just speaks to, there's an understated classy nature to the Japanese culture that I find very endearing. So I just watch that final out. He just pumps his fist and he smiles, and you know, and then the whole team dogpiles on him. But I just thought the way he reacted to this unbelievable accomplishment was very, very cool. Well, how can I possibly match a no-hitter at Coors Field? I'm going to go with Doc Ellis, who may have thrown a no-hitter on LSD. We don't know that for sure. He walked a bunch of guys. He threw a lot of pitches. He had a very unusual career. There's a just kind of a mystique around that 1970 no-hitter. We'll never know. Doc Ellis died a few years ago. We'll never really know what really happened. But he played at a time where, you know, the 70s were a really funky era in baseball. Facial hair, personalities. He's a little bit before my time, but I've done some research on Ellis and tried to, there's just always going to be this wondering of what really happened. Was he under the, and I'm not saying go out and do LSD and try to throw baseballs. You know, that's probably a bad idea, but Doc Ellis was a pretty cool pitcher, and we'll never really know what happened that day in 1970, but I know this, he didn't allow any hits.
That's an awesome one. I know that story now that you brought it up, but when I was thinking about no hitters, I didn't think of him. For my third one, I'm going to go with Homer Bailey for a specific reason. I think Homer Bailey, I don't know what your take, Scott, but my take on Homer Bailey is his career is like largely a little disappointing, like a little for bit sure. of what could have been without the injuries. And I think we thought maybe Homer Bailey could have had a higher ceiling, but there was a time when Homer Bailey had thrown the last two no-hitters. So he threw two no-hitters, and in between those two no-hitters, no one else in baseball threw a no-hitter. So there was a moment in time where Homer Bailey could strut around Major League clubhouses saying, I've thrown the last two no-hitters in Major League history. And that would be a pretty cool accomplishment that we probably won't see again anytime soon.
Yeah, you know, I think there's something cool about when an ordinary pitcher has multiple no-hitters. And maybe I'll use that to segue into my next pick, which is going to be Mike Fiers. And I was looking at the list of no hitters. I'm like, oh yeah, Firestreet no hitter last year. And then I'm going down the list. I'm like, wait a minute, he has two no hitters. I don't even remember that first one. And you know, I think we owe something to Mike Fiers. He's the guy who kind of blew the lid off on the Astros cheating scandal. And it's not always the most popular thing in the world to be a whistleblower or to be, you know, some people might say you're a tattletale, you're ratting out your league mates, whatever. I don't know. Mike Fiers is okay with me. And in fact, he's somebody I'm probably looking to stream here and there as the season runs out, even though he won't get a lot of strikeouts. I feel like we've had some good times with him. I remember one time promoting him when he was making a start for the Brewers after a long time in the minors. He struck out like 14 guys that day. Had a nice career and had two no-hitters, including one of them I hardly remember in 2015. So here's a hat tip to Mike Fiers.
That's a good one. I know people talked in the winter about how this was going to maybe hurt his career and you can't trust him in the clubhouse. I think most fans love Mike Fiers for what he did and exposing the Astros. And I'm going to say, he seems to be quite well, like still in Oakland. And I'm going to say, if he's ever a free agent, I hope the Dodgers at least bring him in on a minor league deal. And after what he did for that franchise by exposing the Astros and see if he can pitch his way onto the roster. For my next one, this one's not totally unlikely, but I wanted to name it for two things, the type of pitcher who did it and a moment in the no-hitter. It's just really stuck in my head. It was one of the first ones I thought of. I'm going to pick Mark Burley, just because there aren't many Mark Burleys anymore, right? Like, I got to enjoy him in Toronto a little bit later in his career, not really his prime, but just pitchers who can't throw hard at all but manage to still be successful pitchers. But the reason I picked the Mark Burley no-hitter is the Dwayne Wise catch against the wall in the ninth inning to save that no-hitter. For me, that's one of the more memorable, no-hitter moments. I don't know if I was just especially plugged into baseball that day. And Dwayne Wise, like, he hung around the majors off and on for a few years, but didn't have an especially memorable career. But I like to think that there's one day every year where he and Mark Burley maybe exchange texts or go out for dinner or something, where Mark's just like, hey, thanks again for that catch, Dwayne. And, you know, one of the greatest moments of my career. And, you know, I thought that was a great one. In fact, this afternoon, just for fun, I looked at the video of that catch, just spent a minute and just watched it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic pick for a lot of reasons. Burley actually threw two no-hitters. And a guy who worked really fast. I remember that highlight where they hit a ball back to him and he threw his glove to first base. Unbelievable fielding pitcher, really popular guy. The Wise catch is unbelievable. When Lucas Giolito threw his no-hitter earlier this season, they did a callback to the Burley no-hitter in the ninth inning. I think there's something in the stadium where Wise made the catch. There's some kind of mark on the center field wall or something, like, would show where the catch was made or something. It celebrates it. Just what a great play that was by Wise. And, you know, when you think of all the greatest catches in history, you think of the Jim Edmonds catch, the Willie Mays catch, the Gary Matthews Jr. catch, which I think was unbelievable. It really adds intrigue and value to the play when it's an important game. You know, obviously the Willie Mays catch was in the World Series. You know, the Wise catch preserved a no-hitter, just a really cool moment. Mark Burley was one of my favorite players. And a day and age now where the game can really drag at times, Mark Burley got the ball, got the sign, threw the pitch. You know, just something to be said for that.
I was going to say, Mark Burley to me is, he's a baseball player. Like, that, he's one of those guys where you're like, Mark Burley was just a baseball player. Like, he worked fast. He worked fast. He fielded well. The team loved him. You know, he didn't have the velocity, but he made up for it in other ways. Like, he's just a baseball player. He's one of those throwback, old-fashioned baseball players where, you know, nowadays so many pitchers just come in and go and throw 95. Like, he couldn't do any of that. He was just a baseball player all around, always looking to perfect his game with the skill set that he had.
So a lot of my picks here have been guys who threw unlikely no-hitters. And I think back in the early 90s when I first started playing fantasy and back, you know, back before there was a season pass you could buy, you extra innings package, you know, there wasn't an internet, there wasn't a Twitter. And you just got the news would trickle in where it trickled in. You know, or maybe you'd be watching ESPN, you'd be watching Baseball Tonight, you try to get scores. You know, back in the real old days, you had to try to get a score from your local TV channel. Good luck with that. Or they'd mention the scores on a telecast. And there was a day in the midsummer of 1990 where two pitchers threw no-hitters on the same day. Dave Stewart, who at the time was a really good pitcher for the A's, threw a no-hitter. I think he was on the A's then. He may have been in Toronto. And then Fernando Valenzuela, who was at the tail end of his career, who was in the midst of a 4.59 ERA season, a whip of almost 150, whose ERA plus was 20% below the league average. Somehow he threw a no-hitter the same day Stewart did. And it was just cool. You know, Fernando was so far past his prime. He would only pitch another a year or two before he was out of baseball, or at least out of Major League Baseball. I think he might have pitched elsewhere in professional leagues for a long time. And nobody's really sure how old Fernando is. But there's just something cool about two no-hitters in the same day. And Valenzuela, far past his prime, just for whatever reason. It was kind of much like the Mills no-hitter with a lot of batted balls and just getting luck, you know, fell into place that day. But it was just cool that these two guys threw the no-hitter on the same night. And I can just remember that with whatever freshness you can have from something that's a really old memory. I just remember this no-hitter being on the same day as the Stewart no-hitter and it being pretty cool.
That's a great one. I don't remember that day, but I can verify that Stewart was on the A's and was not yet on the Blue Jays because Dave Steeb's thrown the only Blue Jays no-hitter. Halliday's both came with the Phillies. I'm not picking Steeb because I'm not a big Dave Steeb fan, but the Blue Jays have only had one ever no-hitter, and it was Dave Steeb. So for my last pick,
Steve, you mentioned Dave Steeb. Didn't he once lose a no-hitter in the ninth inning because a ball hit the seam of the artificial surface and it ended up being like a total turf hit? I mean, he had like unbelievably bad luck with no-hitters for a while.
Yeah, so he had lost multiple no-hitters in the ninth inning before he finally came through and got one. And probably actually, I will say, like I said, I'm not a huge Dave Steeb fan, but probably one of the most underrated pitchers of his generation, actually. I feel like maybe he hasn't gotten, if you go back and look at his stats, probably didn't get as much credit as he deserved.
Some people will say that he was maybe more Hall of Fame worthy than Jack Morris, who finally got in at the end of his tenure, you know, the end of his eligibility. But you know, Morris, you know, was on a World Series team and you know, had maybe higher profile moments. He obviously had that famous game he pitched for the Twins in Game 7 of the 91 series. But a lot of people would say that Steve was actually a better pitcher in the 80s.
Yeah, well, to be perfectly blunt, a lot of the media doesn't like Dave Steeb. They didn't like him. They didn't find him personable. They didn't find him helpful. And, you know, I think maybe a little bit because of that, he didn't quite get the coverage that maybe a pitcher of his stature should have.
That's funny because a lot of the stuff was said about Morris, too. Morris was famously prickly with the media. And a couple times he said some really rude things to the sports writers that I'm sure he regrets now. But fascinating.
Morris was prickly, but a good quote, whereas Steve, I think, was more ignoring. And you can't write anything about that. Morris, you're right. Morris had his moments where he drove the media nuts, but at the same time, you could write about that. And whereas Steve was kind of cold, I think. And that's what you can't write about cold. There's not much there. So anyways, for my last pick, I'm going to give credit to my old stomping grounds over at MLB.com. Back before I worked there, the Fantasy 411 podcast they used to have, I'm sure you listened to it a lot, Scott, maybe 10 years ago or so when Mike Ciano and Corey Schwartz did it. Mm-hmm. I used to listen to it all the time, you know, when there weren't nearly as many fantasy baseball podcasts as there were now. I thought they did a great job. They always used to talk about Irvin Santana. They used to talk about Big Irv. And they used to get always fired up about Irvin Santana. So he threw a no-hitter. Irvin Santana, I felt like, was always a bit of a fantasy tease. And I think Corey and Mike used to talk about him all the time because he had some good stretches. And he had some times where he was close to really breaking through. I had him in leagues before where he really paid off. But he also had some really maddening stretches where he would be your number two starter for a while in a fantasy league, and then on the waiver wire. He was really up and down, and he also has the honor of the most recent no-hitter where he allowed a run. He's the only person in the past decade to throw a no-hitter and allow a run in the same game. I did do a quick look. We're going way back to like the 50s or so to find someone who threw a no-hitter and lost. But Irv is the last guy, you know, he's kind of in this fantasy generation, the only guy to throw a no-hitter but also allow a run, which I think just symbolizes his whole career, where you'd be like, oh, he's good. Oh, he's not. He threw a no-hitter. That's amazing. Oh, he actually gave up a run too. So that's Irvin Santana.
Great pick. Great pick. There are a lot of like near no-hitters or like maybe even they don't count as no-hitters that I was considering. I remember one year Matt Young, who was famous for walking guys and hitting guys, he pitched 8 no-hit innings for the Red Sox but managed to lose the game because he hit like 3 guys. He walked like 5, whatever. I think Andy Hawkins famously lost a no-hitter for the Yankees in the 80s. For my final pick, I think they're going to do a 30-for-30 on Tim Lincecum one day because he was a comet. I mean, he was a guy, his first full year in the majors, he won the Cy Young. Next year, he wins the Cy Young again. And then he's just an all-star four straight years. He's at the top of his game, became a fantasy first-round pick. by age 25, 26, 27. And then all of a sudden he lost it. He just couldn't pitch anymore. In 2012, an ERA over 5. He eventually was out of baseball at age 32. There was a day in 2014, Friends and Family League, I'm looking to stream. And the way we have the transaction set up is if you want to stream somebody, you have to pick him up the previous day. And then you put him in your lineup. And then the day he pitches, you could actually cut him and the move won't be effective till the day later. So I was looking to stream somebody. I said, Lincecum, I don't really trust him. His ERA is over 4, but he's pitching against the Padres. That's a good matchup. I'm going to just stream Lincecum for one start. And I'm so sure that I'm not going to keep him no matter what, that I'm going to actually cut him the next day before he pitched. He was still active in my lineup and I just made a move, you know. This is a one and done. This is a one shot deal for Lincecum. I don't care what he does. I'm cutting him no matter what. So he was actually off my roster by the time he pitched and he throws a no hitter. So if you look at that particular year, nobody cares about this. I happen to win the Friends and Family League this year, that year. And I feel like I owe, you know, a part of the percentage to Tim Lincecum. You look at my team log and you'd see Tim Lincecum 9 innings, you know, ERA 0, you know, whip, whatever, 0.13 or whatever. I think he walked a guy that day. But it's just so funny that you would pick somebody up and cut them and then have them throw a no-hitter. And I wish I could remember, speaking of Friends and Family, that one year DJ Short and I were battling for the title and he streamed, I think, a Marlins pitcher who threw a no-hitter on the final day of the season and it helped him clinched the title. And I want to say that the opponents put like a skeleton crew of a lineup together. Like it was a playoff team they were playing and they didn't want to use anybody that good. So they kind of put a sketchy team on the field. But to DJ's credit, he saw the opportunity. And I can't remember what the name of the pitcher was. It was some really nondescript guy in the Marlins who threw a no-hitter on like the final day, maybe the second, I think it was the final day of the season. And so that was talk about a walk-off shot, right? We talk about streaming and everything. If you can find it, you can find a no-hitter in the final day of the season. What a way to drop the mic and clinch a championship.
I think so. I don't know this. I know Henderson Alvarez threw a no-hitter for
that's who it was. It was Henderson Alvarez, you're right.
Former Blue Jay prospect threw super hard, but never was a good strikeout pitcher. Like when he was young on the Blue Jays, they always thought he threw so hard that he would eventually become a really high strikeout pitcher. And then he was actually always a really low strikeout pitcher. But I do remember that no hitter. It'd be interesting back to Lincecum to look back and look at his game log after the no hitter and see, did he really punish you for dropping him? Or like we were talking about going all the way back to being in the podcast with Alec Mills, like maybe Lincecum, maybe you got everything there was out of him. You know, maybe the next start was 5 innings, 4 runs, 5 innings, 3 runs, something like that. And you say, it was bad. I dropped a guy right before he threw a no-hitter, but I got the no-hitter, and you know I didn't really miss anything great after that.
Yeah, so Alvarez, it was the Tigers that he no-hit that day. Don Kelly led off. Andy Dierks batted second. Prince Fielder was in the lineup, but only had one at bat. So it wasn't Brian Pena was the catcher that day. A lot of kind of a scrubby lineup, but whatever. I mean, you throw a no-hitter. I don't care who it's against. I don't care if it's in Little League. I don't care if it's in T-ball. I don't care who you do it against. Only 4 strikeouts that day, but shout out to our friend of the podcast, DJ Short. What a way to clinch a fantasy championship by streaming a no-hitter from the otherwise somewhat forgettable Henderson Alvarez. It sounds like you liked him a little bit more than Dave Steeb, so we'll say that for good old Hendo. Let's see, also receiving votes. Let's see, who else did I have here? Clay Buchholz in 2007. I used to joke about the wheel of Buchholz, how he could pitch great or pitch mediocre. And then there's a Mariners no-hitter in 2012 that included Kevin Millwood and like 5 or 6 different relievers. Every once in a while, you'll see one of those tandem no-hitters. Just a couple of the no-hitters I didn't draft today that I was considering.
Yeah, I looked at, you're right, the Astros had one with Aaron Sanchez and a handful of relievers last year. I thought of the Dallas Braden no-hitter for some reason really sticks in my memory. I don't know why. Dallas Braden was a bit of a character. I think I just had him rostered in a lot of leagues at that moment that he threw the no-hitter. So that one kind of stuck in my memory. And I did think about the Roy Halladay playoff no-hitter because obviously not unlikely that Halladay would throw one, but to throw a no-hitter in your first playoff start is quite unlikely.
Yeah, that was, man, I remember that game really well. I remember being excited. You know, back when there was no universal DH, you know, Halladay going to the National League, I thought it was just a great fantasy opportunity. And I remember thinking I was going to try to get him anywhere I could because now he's going to face, you know, these lineups where they bunt or the pitchers strike out. And you know, obviously he was a great pitcher for Toronto, but then he really kicked it up a gear with the Phillies. And you know, we talk about no hitters. It's also amazing to me. You think of some of the pitchers who never threw one. I mean, Roger Clemens, as great as he was, no hitter. Pedro Martinez never threw a no hitter. It's just you need some luck. You need some breaks, and you know sometimes it turns into what you know. It's also funny. You think of the two no hitters this season, right? Lucas Giolito was so electric the night he no-hit the Pirates. I felt like he could have thrown 12 or 13 innings, and the Pirates just didn't have a chance. And then with Mills, it was just so much of the ball in play. You know, he hit that like 65-degree mile-per-hour curveball, whatever. It's just one of those things where, you know, Alec Mills will never have a game like that again in his life. It's just everything, a confluence of events on the right day.
Yeah, absolutely. Although you'd say he'd never have a day like that in his life, but if he's as good as Mike Fiers, he...
Yep, sure. Yeah. And, you know... Yeah, you know, Burley threw two. Lincecum, when his career had taken a downturn, threw one. So I guess you can never say never. Fred, tell everybody what you're working on and how you're going to help them clinch their championship in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, for sure. So we have another. So Closing Time came out today. We have another Closing Time coming out on Thursday that'll kind of guide people through the weekend if they're looking for advice towards winning their championship. And we got a waiver wire article coming out later this week that'll help them too. And then next week, some Closing Time. But then also next week, we're going to start, when we get to the final week of the season, start looking ahead to what the first round of 2021 is going to look like, which was a really, I've already kind of rough drafted that article. And it's a really fun one. It was a really fun one to write, I think, to kind of think about. Let's just say I don't have Mike Trout as high as most people do.
And on Twitter, it's Fred Zinke MLB. Is that right? Okay. And if you want to keep up with me, Scott_Pianowski on Twitter. Of course, follow the Yahoo Fantasy tag, Yahoo Fantasy. And if you're into other fantasy sports like fantasy football, we're doing podcasts 5 days a week on fantasy football. I'm involved in the Waiver Wire podcast with Andy Behrens that we tape Monday, release Tuesday. We're doing a handicapping podcast with myself and Dalton Del Don. That's a Wednesday tape, Thursday release. And you know, all you can pick and mix and match your favorite Yahoo personalities, whether you like Liz or Andy or Matt or Dalton or myself, all certain different kinds of combinations. So we want to help you in every sport we can. We know fantasy football is a big one, but we also want you to get that fantasy baseball trophy. Fred Zinke says go out and get a trophy. He wants you to have a gigantic Stanley Cup sized trophy, maybe put it in your front yard for, you know, 3 or 4 months. Let people know. And you know, give Fred a tweet. Tell him thank you for helping him guide you to a championship. For Fred Zinke, for our producer Raghu, keeping us on the air and sounding great, I'm Scott Pianowski. Go do some streaming. Go pick up some Rockies. Go pick up some Colorado Coors Field bats and get those standings where you like. And we'll talk to you soon.
Loza, and every day the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast gets you ready for the week ahead.
Just take Josh Allen, Andy.
Oh no, oh no, this is a terrible response.
I like him based on the volume he got last week.
Even against this tough run defense.
No, their run defense sucks.
We're talking pickups, trades, predictions, and bets 5 times a week to get you prepped for game day. So go ahead and subscribe to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. And while we can't promise you'll win your league, we guarantee you'll have a good time.